the Bible, the authoritative source of our theology. Commentary for the April 25th, 2020 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth, John 1:14. For as long as I can remember, the Bible has held a special attraction for me. I will admit that the archaic language of the King James Version may have played a role in piquing my curiosity. The strange language and the claims of almost magical happenings were compelling. I had begun reading science fiction in the third grade, and this seemed to fit right in. Just like the science fiction, the Bible had villains who plotted evil conspiracies and heroes who were guided by higher moral principles. Admittedly, this was science fiction largely written between the victory of World War II and the social moral collapse that accompanied the Vietnam War. I suspect modern science fiction, with all of its psychological angst, would not have had the same effect as Lucky Star and the Moons of Jupiter by Isaac Asimov and the rest of the Lucky Star series. I am tempted to look back at those times as simpler, without the complications of modern life. In reality, though, I think I probably had a simpler outlook on life. The problems of life are often mercifully kept at a distance from the lives of children. They will have to deal with adult life soon enough. But for the adults living during those post-war years, life was becoming complicated and frightening. The Korean War exploded into the news headlines with an intensity that was not rivaled until the Vietnam War. Russia developed nuclear weapons and the Cold War began, with everyone living under the threat of nuclear annihilation, as portrayed in the 1964 movie Failsafe. Perhaps the thought that life was so tenuous drove the anything-goes attitudes of the 1960s and 70s. Escapist literature was perhaps also a response to the angst. Science fiction served that purpose as well. And maybe the Bible did also, for it promised a different outcome for God's people than the dystopian future that appeared to be rapidly gaining ground in the world around us. At a time when many felt helpless before these globe-encompassing threats, the Bible offered the idea that there was an alternative with a God who intervened 2,000 years ago and who promised to intervene again when things got bad enough. This was like a safety valve on the pressure cooker the world seemed to be. All we needed to do was to live as Jesus had modeled and taught back then, and his grace and love would gain us entree to something better, perhaps in this life, and certainly in the next. Some who may have had more than their share of knocks in life may feel that this is foolishness, but one of the joys of childhood is a right to entertain foolishness in order to see where it leads. I became familiar with what is in the Bible long before I began to understand what the Bible is. It is an anthology, a collection of works by different authors compiled for publication. Usually in such works, there is a central organizational theme chosen by the compiler or editor. Science fiction, as well as other genres, has produced anthologies such as The Year's Best Science Fiction for as long as I have been reading. The Bible also has a theme, as it is a compilation of experiences by various individuals and peoples and their struggles to define themselves and what that means in terms of having a relationship to a creative, interventionist deity with incomparable powers of being, action, and perception. While some may wish to see the Bible as having sprung complete from the mouth of God and therefore literally perfect and beyond question, the reality is far different. The Bible appears to have its roots in oral traditions long shared by primitive peoples, perhaps as a means to find rationality and meaning in the chaotic events that challenge their lives. In a time before knowledge of disease and genetic disorders, such things could be explained as God-ordained and beyond our understanding. Therefore, as mere mortals, we must humbly accept that somehow it was all according to plan. This may even have eventually evolved into an attempt to avoid personal responsibility for bad things happening, giving rise to the problem of theodicy. After all, if suffering is attributable to God, why is he this way? This becomes especially challenging to faith when confronted with the obvious loving compassion of Jesus and the many Bible verses that speak of a loving God. In all fairness, though, in asking God why he allows such heartbreaking evil in the world, he might just as rightfully ask the same question of us. We ask why his justice does not immediately punish the wicked and rebuke the evil. But we also have done the same at times when evil goes free in the interest of protecting the civil rights of all. But I digress. While the Bible stimulates us to ask questions like these, it is the source of the Bible that is our focus. As the oral traditions began to be written down, discrepancies were discovered and in some cases were made to harmonize with one another and in others not dealt with at all. A good example of the former is the number of animals to be taken by Noah into the ark. One account in Genesis chapter 6 has God saying, "Take two of every kind of animal," while in a later account in chapter 7, God says, "Two of every kind of animal, except the clean animals. Those are to be taken into the ark with seven pairs of each kind." Obviously, since the sacrificial system had been in place since Abel, offering sacrifices would have exterminated species that only had one pair saved from the flood. Never mind that it is biologically challenging in any case to prevent the extinction of a species with only one breeding pair. The account here is about religion, not science. But the altered account reveals that even religion must bow to logic at some point. There are many apparent attempts to harmonize the text, as well as outright contradictions in the Bible. But these, far from being slights on the Bible, are proofs of its anthological authenticity. In spite of the attempts to gloss over the apparent conflicts, these are records of real people seeking a path forward in their understanding of God, even if their experiences are not always in harmony with one another. Through the centuries, many committees and councils have sought to purify the Bible by establishing an allowable canon and ruling out many other works. These bodies do not always agree. For instance, when an attempt was made to create a Greek volume of Hebrew texts in the 3rd century BCE, a group of scholars created the Septuagint, a volume that included several texts that the later Hebrew Old Testament, as recognized by the Council of Jamnia in the 2nd century CE, did not. The Septuagint was a commonly referred to scripture of Christ's day. The documents that eventually became the New Testament, also being written in Greek, illustrate how dominant the Greek language had become in Palestine, probably due to the influence of the empire created by Alexander the Great and overseen by his generals and their descendants. Since today, most translations go directly to the Hebrew text for the Old Testament, they tend to follow the later Hebrew canon and leave out the books and chapters that the Septuagint included. Our New Testament canon was not relatively finalized until the 4th century and was likely driven to a degree by the emperors in order to standardize worship. The period prior to the Council of Nicaea was rife with alternative texts that were quoted in the patristic literature of the time. Some were based on divergent theologies, and others were outright forgeries purporting to be works written by the apostles. With the power of the state behind it, the church began in earnest to consolidate power and purge the world of documents that encouraged alternatives. As a result, we know of some of those documents only by name, as no extant copies survived. Others have survived because they were hidden away, or because vying political entities granted refuge to some worship communities and placed the documents geographically out of reach of those seeking to destroy them. All of this makes the Bible as we have it today appear to be nothing more than a creation of men to justify the control and exploitation of others in the name of religion. And, in many instances, that is exactly how it has been used. But as a child, none of that had any meaning for me. I was just a young boy with a book that fascinated me and drew me in. There was something about this book that gave me hope in troubled times and challenged me to be better than I was. It taught me that what seems impossible is possible with God. I have had the reality of that kind of experience myself several times over the course of my life. Of course, some may simply state that those experiences were merely coincidental, even though unexplainable. But for others, that is the point where religion intersects with mundane reality most profoundly. And it is exactly that revelatory claim that makes the Bible something beyond a man-made anthology. That it can still do that in spite of every effort made to mold it to other purposes is perhaps little short of miraculous. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You will find additional commentaries and podcasts at our website, www.visitstillwaters.com.